Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And a reminder that you can get a note directly to Steve or Justin. So if you have a question that you want them to answer personally, this is the way to do it. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Justin. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition, January 13th. Not 13th, it's not 13th.
It's 17th.
It's the 17th. January 17th edition of Invest Talk, and today, that person you just heard, we have a little treat. Justin Klein's with us today.
I'm a treat. Is that what I am?
A little treat.
It's been a trick. Of a trick, or either
a
way.
Trick or treat?
Depends on how you look at it. I've only done one show in the past month, so I figured. And when was the last time we did a show together?
A long time ago.
A long time.
Yeah. You know, you've been kind of ill, and our time has just been off.
I'm healthy now. I'm good.
Okay. Again, everybody, this is the show for the average investor, trying to make you a little bit above average. And we're looking ahead, planning for financial independence. Everybody does that. InvestTalk is all about making adjustments. Everybody has to make adjustments to their portfolio. There's no set-and-forget-it investment strategy, except maybe you can be a buy-a-holder as long as you have 20, 30, 40-year time horizon.
And you have a strong stomach for bear markets.
Yep, you're okay with that. If you can do it, then that's great. It will work. It works over time. It really does.
It's a get-rich-slowly.
Yep. So we're here to help you with that. You know, so let's get to work. We try to answer your questions live during this hour, 45 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, and you can leave your questions on our 24-hour listen line. I have one today from Allison, who's 19, had a question. And just call the number, 888-99-CHART. We're live now, but you can call anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Today, returns aren't the only factor determining whether your portfolio is allocated appropriately. So we're going to talk some about uncovering the risks in your portfolio. I know we talk about it a lot, risks. That's because it's not very important.
But it's not the fun part, though. Everyone wants to talk about gains. They don't talk about opportunities. They don't talk about risks.
Everybody's trying to look for that next big Microsoft that'll give them 10,000% returns over the years.
See, I think it's... People may get tired of it, too, because over the past, 7, 8 years, there hasn't been a lot of volatility, a lot of risk, right? And so that is the exact time when you want to be highlighting risk, because usually people start to forget about the risks that the market has.
So anyway, that's going to be one of our talking points today. And, of course, part of managing risk is anticipating broader trends in the market and the economy. You have to understand all that. While the overall stock market ebbs and flows over many weeks and months, and maybe throughout the years, investors are ultimately interested in the trend of the market. Higher highs and higher lows tend to mean positive stock momentum, an environment that makes for steady profits. The market tends to stair-step upwards. It doesn't go up straight line. It stair-steps upwards. It
ebbs and flows.
So, we saw that in 2008, the stair stepped down before it finally just crashed and gave up. So, but most of the time on a down market, it's an elevator at some point. Mm-hmm. It goes straight down.
Yeah, stair steps up and takes the elevator down.
Yeah, there's an old saying, the market crawls up a wall of worry. It doesn't shoot up. Mm-hmm. So, have you figured out where the economy is going? Do you like you know where the direction of stocks are right now? Not the last since Trump been elected. How about the last few weeks? Have you looked to see what's going on?
Yeah, really since the middle part of December, the market's been kind of choppy to the down.
Yep. So it's lost its momentum. It hasn't really fallen. We won't say that, but it certainly has lost its momentum. Now it's a matter of, is it gathering itself for another stair step up?
Or a complete reversal of the Trump bump.
Exactly. Which one is it? I don't know. We don't have a crystal ball either, you know. We don't know. But you need to look at some basics. What's the GDP doing? Do you know how to calculate a GDP? Everybody talks about GDP, gross domestic product, but what does it really mean? Well, it's really made up of four components: consumption, investment, government spending, and net exports. Those four things make up the GDP. Okay, and the biggest part of that is consumer consumption. The consumer is the driver. You know, so therefore, you got to look at income trends. Is income going up for them? Savings rates, wealth effect, personal balance sheets, confidence. Do you know what the consumer's thinking? All that affects what he's going to spend.
And, also, and you have to look at what the big industrial companies, what the transportation companies are doing and how well they're doing. I think that's a critical part as well to understand where the economy is headed. How are the FedExes of the world, the UPS of the world, the train companies, you know, the railroad companies, are they doing?
Packaging companies.
Yeah, and if they're doing well, the economy is doing probably pretty well. If not, then vice versa.
So what's the government? Is it spending more or less money? Businesses, are they spending more or less money? And exports and imports are very important. Exports and imports have been a net negative for our GDP for decades. Mm-hmm.
And will probably be for decades.
It probably will, because we import so much more than we export.
Mm-hmm.
That detracts from our growth rate.
Trump might change that, though. What if he forces all the companies to stop importing things?
He's going to try to change the mentality to say, you know, hey, we got to stop this at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he can physically actually make it happen, but he's certainly going to give it an effort.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a touch and go type of thing. I think some companies are going to kind of go along with it, and some companies are kind of probably going to give him the middle finger and do their own thing, right? I mean, think of what he's doing with BMW. He's already threatened BMW and 35% tariff on importing cars from Germany. You buy them because they're German-made cars, right? So if they're made here, are they really German-made cars?
Yeah, that's a problem. Remember, they've been all foreign car makers have been opening factories here in the U.S. for a decade now.
Yeah. So BMW does make some cars here.
Some of the models. Yeah. Almost all manufacturers. Hyundai is going to spend billions to build a factory here in the U.S. So it's already kind of happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because these companies, and not because anybody's forcing it to, it's because it makes economic sense.
Well, and one thing that he's overlooking too is not just that cars are imported into the U.S., but car parts, right? About 30-something billion in cars are imported in the U.S. every year, but about 70-something billion in car parts are imported. So that's a bigger deal of those car parts being imported, you know, built in Mexico or other places and imported here. And he's not really talking about that.
Well, he's a businessman. He knows how business works. And he's going to, you know, think about all those things before it really – and he's got to get the Congress to agree with him. So he can't just do things.
He's not the king.
Yeah. So we're up for any questions you might have. Let's begin the Q&A portion. 888-99-CHART is our number. Let's go to Greg in Boston. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yep. So I just had a quick question. I have a little bit of student loan debt still racked up, but I have quite a bit of money saved up. Would you suggest I pay it off or put my money I've saved up into the stock market and keep paying it off month by month?
Well, it's a related email I got that we'll read later on in the show, but it is a very good question. It really comes down to the best use of your money. How expensive is your student loan money? How much? Do you know what the interest rate is on that?
Well, it's a government one, so it's a little bit. I think it's around 5%.
Okay, so 5%. So the question is, can I make more money in the market? In my mind, this is how I would look at it. If I have put money in my IRA or 401k, that's tax deferred money, and can I make more money there than I can? Than 5%, which is costing me. Go ahead.
Yeah, so through my work, I have a TSP account that I've maxed out, and I have a traditional IRA on my own.
Do you max that out too?
I'm just kind of, I maxed that up too, yeah.
So now you're talking about extra money that you don't necessarily, that's really a coin toss mind.
See, to me, at 5%, whenever you have debt, if you pay that off, you take extra money, you pay that off, it's like you're guaranteeing yourself that yield, right? Because you're not paying it. So in this market, a 5% guaranteed yield is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, if you were probably closer to 1% or 2%, I still have a few $1,000 in student loan debt at less than 2%. And I don't pay it off because of how cheap it is. Now, if it was 5%, I probably would pay it off. So, you know, for me, I would pay it off.
So you notice that Justin just said what's the best use of the money for himself. At 1% and 2%, the best use is to invest it.
Mm-hmm. But at 5%, that's kind of a different conversation.
Now you get to the borderline. Well, you know, so you have to make that decision.
Yeah.
Okay, Greg?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Uncovering the risk in your portfolio. That's one of our main talking points today. Also wanted to talk about OPEC. And are they relevant anymore? OPEC, you know, the oil cartel, are they really relevant anymore? We're going to discuss that. And the New York Fed Chief Dudley wants you to borrow money on your home.
Of course he does. Spend. That's what these Keynesian economists want you to do. Okay,
just so you know, I think he's an idiot.
Yeah.
What did we just go through in 2007, 2008? A housing bubble, everybody borrowed money. Well, we'll get into it. Don't get me started on that. And finally, HSAs. You know what an HSA is?
Health savings account.
That's right. Is it a good idea? What are the benefits? What are the downfall and the benefits of that? What are they? Does anybody know? I mean, I got some information I'm going to share with you on that. That's what we're going to talk about. The market was down today. The Dow down 59. The S&P down 35. And the Nasdaq down 35. And the S&P down 7. And so it was a down day. Nothing tremendous. But Justin brought up before the show, did you notice the dollar and gold today? Because Trump talked down the dollar. He was very upset that he thinks the dollar's too high. Now, just because the president says, or the onboarding president says the dollar's too high, doesn't mean he can make it low. But
he seems like a president that's going to try to force his hand, so he wants his way.
He wants to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah, but we had a great day, especially compared with
them. Yeah, we had a very good investment day.
Mm-hmm.
We're very happy with the market being down today.
Yeah.
So anyways, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? I'm Financial Steve Peasley along with Justin Klein today. We're glad you're here. Risk is something you should wonder about, and when it comes to your portfolio, you really should know how much risk your retirement accounts are exposed to. And there's a way with software created by a Nobel Prize winning designer. It's a free risk analysis tool. You can do it to take a giant step toward making sure your portfolio is right. It just fits your personal risk tolerance. Try it on investtalk.com.
Hi there. I was just wondering about investments and taxes. If you sell a stock, I know you have to pay cost basis and pay taxes on the gains, but how do you treat the commissions that you might have paid to the broker? Do you get to deduct those, or how do you treat that? That's my question, and thanks for taking it.
Well, most people factor that into the cost of the stock that you purchase.
Yeah, it's part of the cost basis. So the cost to buy it is part of the cost basis, and the cost to sell it is subtracted from the proceeds. And so those are, I guess, you get to write those off.
Yeah, they're write-offs. So you get that, figure that in. It's pretty simple stuff. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 1 minute left. Remember, we're going to talk about several things. Risk is going to be one of them. How to evaluate risk. There's various ways. We'll get into a little bit more detail. Volatility, beta, all those things. We'll talk about those.
I think the most interesting one is risk of not achieving your goals.
So this is InvestTalk, everybody. Remember, we're not all stocks and bonds. Maybe you're wondering about a living trust, whether you need one or not. Or life insurance. What kind of life insurance? Want a sounding board? Just give us a call. 888-99-CHART. How to reach us right now. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Ajib in Bay Area. How are you doing, Ajib?
Hi, Steve. I have a question about Bay Area real estate. My question is, what is the expected trend in the real estate prices in Bay Area over the next 1, 3, 5 years? And also, there's a lot of new construction coming up in Bay Area. So would it be better to wait and expect a slight dip in the real estate prices, or just to buy when it's convenient?
Well, if we're going to talk about...
And then I have...
Oh, go ahead.
I had another quick question. it doesn't make sense to buy a little older home or buy a newer home, because I believe the new homes are a little more pricey compared to, you know, homes which are 5-10 years old.
Are you talking about in the Bay Area or anywhere else in the United States?
In Bay Area.
Yeah, Bay Area.
I we're telling our clients to be patient, especially in the Bay Area. I do think that the tech bubble 2.0 is deflating. You know, I don't know if I'd say it's quite popped completely, but, you know, it's certainly deflating. Higher interest rates are going to affect that market pretty dramatically because of the high prices. So I do think, you know, in the 1-3-5 years, I would expect some weakness. But, you know, it's a slow thing usually. Interest rates are real estate prices tend to move a lot slower than stock prices, for example.
And everybody, we're talking about the Bay Area, the Silicon Valley, San Francisco Bay Area, which the prices are just insanely high. I mean, I don't think anybody realizes that outside of California, I don't think anybody understands how insane it's gotten. I mean, a 1,200 square foot old 1950-60 home in San Jose is well over $1 million, and a little square plot of land.
Yeah,
nothing.
And we if you look back to post tech bubble 1.0, you know, in the early 2000s, you did see a pretty big slide in rents and prices after that whole bubble popped as well. So I think you're going to see something similar. It might not, I don't think it's going to be as quick and maybe direct. I think it's going to be a little choppier than that bubble popping. So, you know, if you're looking to buy, you know, I actually talked to a client today when we're setting up a call with our team up there this weekend to talk about him buying a place, and, you know, we're saying it's good to have somebody there, good to find some, have somebody looking out for good deals, because there's always good deals in the marketplace. It's just a matter of being patient enough to pick them up, and I think you should just need to be patient.
Yeah, if you're not being pressured, Ajib, I wouldn't be a buyer right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be an aggressive buyer.
Okay.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
And I think Bay Area real estate long term, it's good.
Oh, yeah,
I think Silicon Valley isn't going anywhere.
No.
I think technology is always going to be a big part of our country going forward for a long time. But, you know, it's going to ebb and flow. And in that type of environment, it's going to ebb hard on the downside, and it's going to flow to the upside like it is now, pretty hard as well. So if you have a very long time horizon, you know, you just got to find a good deal and go with something you like.
Okay, value risk in your portfolio. And we're talking about the individual risk of your stocks or positions or equities, whatever you have, whether there could be bonds too. There's risk involved in everything that you buy. And how to measure the risk is not difficult for equities, for instance. Volatility, you can measure the volatility. If something is very volatile, you know, and I don't know if we want to get into standard deviations or not, but that's how you measure volatility. If it's way above its normal volatility or deviation, or way below it, that tells you whether you should be wary and buy more, or be wary that maybe you should take profits. But it's not an absolute signal per se to buy or sell something.
And if you looked at our last webinar, we talked about the difference between growth stocks versus value stocks, and we showed a standard deviation chart. And usually, if you're looking at those type of charts, when they get to 2 standard deviations, things change, right? Things go back to mean revert. And so that's what you're talking about when you're looking at these standard deviations. It's important to understand what is an extreme. 1 standard deviation, not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
2 is usually where it starts to get, you get worried. And then beta is a measure of how volatile something is compared to the stock market, the S&P. And so anything above 1 is more volatile than the S&P. Anything below 1 is less, and anything negative with negative beta, I mean, it moves opposite direction of the S&P.
And that's also not a signal to buy or sell. It's just telling you how volatile something is.
And how much risk you're taking in relation to the market.
Yeah, it's more of a risk tool, okay? So there's different things that you can look at for risks, and then maybe the risk of not achieving your goals because you're too conservative. That's mm-hmm. a risk too.
Mm-hmm. And vice versa, you're too aggressive. I know a lot of people, they have a lot of money. We have clients, we talk about this sometimes, they have millions of dollars, and they're pretty normal people. They don't spend a lot of money, and they don't need to take a lot of risk, but they're okay with it because that's their risk tolerance. But it doesn't make sense to take a lot of risk because all you're doing is risking your livelihood when you have plenty of money to live out the rest of your life and be comfortable. So you want to dial down the risk, and that's what we do for clients a lot as well.
We're heading into part two of the Tuesday Invest Talk. Plenty of time for you to get your questions in. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART to talk live between 4 and 5 Pacific Time, 888-992-4278.
We thank you for subscribing to the podcast. We'll continue now, and Steve wants you to know about one of the most valuable services rendered by KPP Financial. And it's another free service. Beyond our Invest Talk program and our Insiders Informational Program, there's a way KPP can help you evaluate the risk in your current retirement portfolio. All you have to do is answer a few questions online to begin the analysis process. Then, if you'd like, the folks at KPP Financial can correlate those results with your risk comfort and the risk within your current portfolio. It's all free, and it all begins on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab. And now let's get back to our podcast.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go to talk to Abhijit. How are you doing, Abhijit, in San Jose?
Good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
So I wanted to ask about Netflix. I actually recently sold all my stakes in Netflix, and the stock is still going up. So I was just wondering if it's going to keep on going up after tomorrow once they come up, once they announce their results.
Well, I can't tell you what it's going to do tomorrow or this week or next week or a month from now, but I can tell you it's due for a pullback. I can tell you it's gotten way ahead of itself, in my personal opinion. And technically speaking, you got it. It's doing it, raising on not that much volume. It's doing it with a poor MACD. It's doing it. There's many things that you look at and say, okay, how does it keep doing this? Mm-hmm. And I just don't feel that it'll keep going. Justin, do you think?
And fundamentally, it's not good at all. I mean, the P/E ratio is way too high. It's cash flow and operating cash flow numbers, free cash flow numbers just are all very negative. They're spending a ton of money on new content, creating their own content, buying content, expanding globally.
Right.
And, you know, that's certainly done well for the top line revenues. You know, revenues are still growing in the mid-20s, low 30s. So that's very good. But you're still paying a lot for that. So I think you did well by selling it, and I would not be owning Netflix.
Yeah, it's a great company, Abhijit, mm-hmm. but I'd definitely wait for a big pullback before I'd consider it.
Yeah, there's a difference between a great company and a great investment.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a great company, but not a great investment at this point. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks
I
for
have
the call.
One more or no?
No, I'm sorry. Give us a call tomorrow. I'll be happy to take it. Thanks, Abhijit. Appreciate it. OPEC is no longer relevant, in my personal opinion. OPEC is trying to control the supply of oil out there, and they recently got together and agreed on a cut in production. And I can't tell you how many years they've done this, and it never works. But more importantly, oil production in the U.S. is going to go up 41,000 barrels forecasted for February, and all of that coming from shale oil. Shale oil. And all that's coming, almost all of it, from being more efficient, not necessarily drilling for more oil and more wells.
Yeah, now adding more wells is just better technology.
So now the rig count did go up. Mm-hmm. Nothing dramatic, but it did go up.
But it's nowhere near what it was a couple of years ago. It's starting to go up, like you said, but it's not back to peak levels or anything like that. And we're still producing probably too much oil.
Yeah. So is OPEC really relevant? Because if they decide to cut and the prices stay high,
OPEC used to be the swing producer, but they're no longer. You know, shale oil is the swing producer, and all of these countries, almost all of them, in OPEC, right? It's a cartel of about a dozen or so countries, and they're all running massive budget deficits.
Yeah.
Right? So they need higher oil. They need to produce oil and get oil revenue.
Yeah, pay attention to all the government bonds now being offered by, what, Saudi Arabia and a couple other. They're oil-rich countries, and now they're issuing bonds.
Yeah, because they need oil prices near $100 for them to sustain all the spending that they've gotten used to, you know, social spending, because a lot of them are pretty tyrannical governments, right? And they need to make their people happy, and to do that they spend money on social programs, and they can't afford them at these levels, so they need to continue to pump oil and get revenue to pay for those, and I don't think that's really going to change.
Nice. I don't think it's possible. So OPEC is really not relevant.
And think of Trump too. I mean,
he wants to be oil independent.
He wants to drill.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think OPEC matters at all anymore. Yep. Here's an investing terms you should know. Profit and loss statement, P&L, also known as the income statement. A profit loss statement is a financial statement that summarizes the revenues, costs, expenses incurred during a specific period of time, usually a fiscal quarter or year. These records provide information about a company's ability or lack of ability to generate profit by increasing revenue or reducing costs or both. The P&L, profit and loss statement, is also referred to as a statement of profit or loss, income statement of operations, statement of financial results, and income expense statement. So the terms get kind of confusing sometimes.
Well, that's why you need to understand not just what the terms are, but what they actually mean, because one person might refer to it as one thing, another term, and they're talking about the same thing.
Yep. So if you need the definition, you need to see it, go to investopedia.com. You know I like that website, investopedia.com.
We're glad you're with us today on Invest Talk. When studying the economy, we look at economic reports from the various government and non-government agencies. Do you know where to find them and what they mean? Economic indicators. That's just one of the info sheets you have instant access to when you're an InvestTalk insider. With your insider membership, you also get instant access to our library of recorded webinars. And anybody can sign up for free. Just go to investtalk.com.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I am calling from Boca Raton, Florida. And my question is, do you think I should hold on to or sell off El Pollo Loco? Ticker symbol is LOCO. I used to live in California, and that was one of my favorite fast food chains. I always sort of hoped that they would grow and grow and grow and make it all the way to Florida. But it doesn't seem like that's happening. Although they are opening new stores, seems like when I check the news, they probably open a new store every couple months or so. Anyway, I've held this stock for probably like the last year, and I'm just watching it go sideways. Anyway, what are your thoughts?
You know, in answer to his opening stores, do you remember Boston Market, Justin?
Mm-hmm.
El Pollo Loco is probably doing it smarter.
Yep.
Boston Market, for everybody who doesn't remember, they expanded extremely fast.
In the 90s.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, they lost over half their stores because I don't know if they filed bankruptcy or went bankrupt.
Yeah, I think they went bankrupt.
But because they overexpanded too fast and they had took on all this debt, but the growth of their food sales didn't go with it. So
yeah,
I think
the quality of their food declined pretty drastically when they got so big, because it's hard to scale that type of business with good quality. You know?
So El Pollo Loco is doing a better job of it. And, you know, I can't tell you, it's $12.50.
433 stores, so, you know, decent size.
It's mostly here in the Southwest area. Are they making good money? Decent money, 69 cents a share next year, but that's not a huge growth.
Mm-hmm.
Growing maybe 8-9%. Quarter over quarter sales,
modest amount of debt, which is good. You know, like you said, they're not over leveraging themselves.
I mean, it's nothing exciting. I wouldn't buy this stock because there's nothing to tell me it's exciting or something's going to.
It's not a great value by any stretch. So it's not like you're getting something super cheap. Operating earnings yield is about 8.6%. That's okay. You know, it's okay. Good, but you know, it doesn't like you said, doesn't get me excited, especially with earnings growth in the high single digits.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, there's no really reason for you to go out and buy up oil.
And there's no dividend. You know, it's not like, oh, it's going sideways, but I'm going to get a 3 or 4% dividend.
That's not happening either.
No, you're not getting a dividend. So I would probably redeploy the money somewhere better.
Yeah, if you own it, I would. Hold on. Here's an event. Well, we already did that. Okay, we've got an email. This is from Allison, and she says, "Hi, Steve. I'm a young investor just starting out. I'm 19, and I was wondering the best way to invest or gain additional income to pay off debt, specifically student loans." Now, remember, she's 19.
Mm-hmm.
"Is there a certain area of the market I should really focus on that could gain a good amount of income in 6 to 8 years when I get my MBA? If you could answer this on the podcast, that'd be great." So what she's thinking, I'm assuming, is she's got money right now, and she wants to, you know,
earn something on it to pay off debt.
To pay off her income, her student loan debt.
And this goes back to that call earlier.
Exactly.
When she needs to earn more than whatever her loan cost is for that to be worthwhile.
Yeah, if she, and I agree with Justin, it's around 5%. If that loans are costing you 5%, I would pay down the loans with money, not invest it.
My number would be 4. Anything above 4, I say you're getting a guaranteed return. Remember, when you have debt and you're paying interest on that debt and you pay that debt off, you're no longer paying that interest, right? So you're guaranteed whatever that interest rate is.
Simply because you don't have it.
Yeah, because you don't have that debt anymore. And so that's why when people are trying to focus on reducing their debt load, getting rid of debt, we always say you start with the highest percentage debt, which is usually credit cards, right? And then, you know, maybe a car loan, and then you go down to student loans. And that's in general, right? So if you have if this young lady, Allison, she has a student loan debt, I would just say just pound at it. Keep paying it off. Put as much money towards it as you can and get that guaranteed return of not paying interest.
Now, unless you're this is 2%, which probably not in this day and age.
Yeah.
But, you know, remember, you have to take risks to earn much better than 5%.
Yeah.
And so you have to trade risk with certainty.
And this goes back to what I was telling you before. You know, after 7-8 years of market goes up, people are not used to risk anymore. They think there's no risk in the market. Well, guess what? In the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a bear market, and you're going to feel that risk again.
Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
We're good. Thank you.
I had a question. I wanted to know the following, if you're able to answer it. What does it mean if a stock, for example, perhaps a foreign stock, if they become listed on the NASDAQ international designation, what does that mean?
Well, a foreign stock to be listed on our exchanges, New York or NASDAQ, has to become an ADR, American Depository Receipt. Mm-hmm. American Deposit Receipt means a large bank, J.P. Morgan, you know, Chase, you know, whatever. They have to sponsor that company by having their shares here. They combine those shares and reissue them on our exchange as ADR. Now, I just simplified that process dramatically, okay? But that's how they get listed on our exchange, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they're still traded wherever they're at in their foreign country, but you can buy them here as an ADR, and that's just simply what it means. And it's probably it's listed on the NASDAQ exchange, and they tend to kind of jump up and down a little bit more than most stocks, right? Because their actual shares are trading intraday, right?
Overnight if they're in a foreign.
Yeah, overnight. Yeah, overnight when war markets close, they're open in that foreign market, and then once our market opens, the stock has to adjust quickly, all of that movement from the previous day in that foreign market. So they tend to jump up and down on the open a lot more than your average stock.
But it's not a perfect correlation, but it's pretty darn close,
okay,
to the foreign.
And can you tell me if that is something like that? Is that a precursor, for example, to like an IPO to a full NASDAQ?
No. They're already an existing company.
Yeah, and they're public in their own country.
Yeah, it's already a public company.
Yeah.
Just not in the United States. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks,
I think
James.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. IPO, initial public offering. That's when a company first gets listed on our exchange.
And it wouldn't be an initial because guess what? It's already been issued in another country.
So it's not an initial public offering.
Yeah, exactly.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. New York Fed Dudley wants you to borrow on your house. He said, quote, homeowners overlearn the lessons from the housing boom.
They what? Overlearned?
Overlearned? You overlearned something?
What Maybe he underlearned.
He underlearned. So, in other words, he's saying, we want you to do the same thing we did before, borrow more and more and more against your house, so when the housing market does fall, when the prices do fall, you'll be upside down again. Does this make sense to anybody? Am I the only one that thinks this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard a Federal Reserve member, president, say in New York? I think he should be fired.
To tap into equity. He says homeowners should tap into their equity.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't that the issue? See, this just goes to show you
we
that.
We just got through this surviving this.
This is what these central bankers, they want, though. They want you to just borrow and borrow and borrow. And that's their goal, is to get you to borrow and spend, borrow and spend. And if consumers aren't doing what they want, they're just going to yell at them and tell them to do it.
But it makes no sense from, you're now 65 years old. I'm going to borrow money against my house, because that's what the Federal Reserve thinks I should do. When you don't have income coming in, you're retired, you should have the house paid off by then. This makes no sense. And we just went through this. And it's unsustainable. And you borrow money against your house. You spend it. Are you going to spend next?
Yeah.
You already spent all the money in your house. So, therefore, you're just postponing an economic recession down the road.
It should be a last resort. Tapping into equity in your home should be a last resort.
Yeah.
And to me, it also just shows how stupid these central bankers are, that they're trying to force our economy to be predicated on housing. Why? Why does our whole economy have to be based on housing? There's no rhyme or reason for it. It should be based on good businesses and strong productivity and things like that. Things that are sustainable. Not borrowing against your house to sustain the economy. Yeah. It's an unsustainable way to make the economy grow. It's
the only thing it's insuring is another recession.
Exactly. And a worse recession because people are not going to have their home to tap into in an emergency.
There's no cushion.
Exactly.
It makes no... So don't do that, everybody. Don't do that. You're listening to Invest.
Hey, gentlemen, this is Dan from Seattle. Really appreciate the podcast. I'm an investor insider on your website. I just had a question. I was getting ready to pull the trigger on Nike for a long-term value play, and something else on my watch list caught my eye coming back down in the range, getting kind of attractive, is Walmart. They're about 8% or so off their six-month high here. They pay a better dividend than Nike. The PE looks decent. I just wanted to get your take on that Walmart versus Nike for a long-term value play. I appreciate it, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Well, Nike is not a value play at this point. It's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
When you say long-term, I think Nike will do very well over the years, okay? Mm-hmm. But as far as value right now, it'd be Walmart.
Mm-hmm. It's
clearly.
Lower, much better operating earnings yield, over almost 11%, where Nike's at about 5%. Certainly Nike has better growth but it's also going to be more cyclical, more volatile. So to me, Walmart will have some cyclicality to it because obviously consumer spending will go down in a recession, but I think it'll hold up better because of the low price offerings it has
and the high dividend.
Yeah. So to me, Walmart is a good play, a much better play now. I think Nike's great to have in your watch list, but I pick it up in the next recession.
Yeah, I wait for a really big pullback in Nike. Mm-hmm. And I love Nike. I think Nike's a great company. Mm-hmm. They don't get me wrong. We're not bad-mouthing the company. Mm-hmm. We're talking about investments.
Mm-hmm. But he's also looking at apples versus oranges
right?
You're looking at two very, very different type of companies.
Yeah, very different. Let's go to Jerry in San Mateo. How you doing, Jerry?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call. Do you want to talk about Teva Pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, it's been hit pretty good. It was appealing about 2 weeks ago, and now, do I just write it out?
I'd write it out. I would not sell Teva at this point. I would not sell it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of support down here in the low 30s. $30 is a huge, huge support, 32. So right now it's at 33.75. So could there be a little more downside? Absolutely. But I do think that most of the negative news is out on it, and I think it will do well long term.
And we've talked about this. So people called me last week, week before. It's, you know, the PE ratio is very, very low. It's a really good value, paying a decent dividend, 3.4%. You gotta like what you see, and yeah, it's still falling. I'm gonna buy more at some point if it keeps falling. I mean, it just looks too attractive to me. Mm-hmm. It's a big, big company.
Right. I mean, it's so big, long term, it'll ride it out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think generic. It's a generic pharma company. I mean, it has some branded drugs, but mainly it's a generic pharma company, and I think that's where the industry's going.
Yeah, that's a growth part of drug companies. Mm-hmm. It's generics, not necessarily name brand or the first generation of drugs. So I still like it, Jerry. I think you just hold on to it. Okay.
All right. Great. Sounds good.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. HSA, everybody. You know what an HSA is? Health savings account. You know how they work? I think what you're going to see is when Trump does something about Obamacare and whatever they are going to do, I think it's going to benefit HSAs. I think they're going to get more popular. HSA is money that you put away in a health savings account that is tax deductible, can grow tax free, and you can use it to pay health costs. Okay, let's say, because you might have a deductible on your health care, high deductible, that's really one of the main purposes of that. But maybe, don't pay drugs. It could be used for that. And it's been shown that if you're 65 years old, that you're going to pay out of pocket about $260,000 over the next 20 years. And an HSA is perfect for that. So it can grow.
And you can roll it over every year if you don't use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It grows. It can grow forever.
And it has to be offered through your employer, correct?
Huh?
It has to be offered through your employer, correct?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
No,
okay.
You can get it individual. Gotcha. There are rules and regs, but I think they're going to change those to make them a lot more liberal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what replaces Obamacare.
Yeah.
It's certainly going to be repealed and replaced. It's just a matter of the details.
I think this is part of that discussion.
Yeah, and I think it could be something that's a minor change, and I think it could be drastic as well. It's very hard to know because it's such a complex issue.
Yeah. Our time is up for this hour, everybody. A reminder, I will be reviewing portfolios in San Ramon on January 31st. But before that, I have time to set aside for reviews by Skype and telephone. Why not avail yourself of this free service? Appointments are limited, so if you're interested, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
I think you only have one appointment left for that day.
Yeah, I'm pretty full up. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, and along with Justin Klein, we're both registered investment advisors. And, of course, KPP is a registered investment advisor firm. Justin Klein and I and everyone at KPP want to thank you for listening today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.